Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Danny Gavigan, Tim Getman, Katie Foster, Elizabeth Jernigan, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, James Lewis, Andy Clements, Nanette Savard, Drew Kopas, Scott McCormick, Michael John Casey, James Konacek, Richard Rowan, M.B. Van Dorn, Tim Carlin, Lily Beacon, Tony Nam, Michael Glenn, Dylan Lynch, Christopher Graybill, Peter Stray, Thomas Penny, Gary Tells, Johan Detweiler, Jeff Allen, Yasmin Toison, Sherry Edelin, Bobby Aselford, and Mort Shelby. Texas Rangers number 7, Hard Trail to Follow. Andy Pickard knew that sooner or later he might have to whip his future brother-in-law. He sensed Farley Brackett's dark presence before he saw him, sitting on a roan horse where the rows ended, almost at the bank of the Colorado River. Farley's erect posture in the saddle indicated he was not in a good humor. He seldom was. Andy had walked 1,000 miles up and down this fallow field, guiding a plow point through the mellow earth and staring at the rump end of a brown mule. At least it seemed like 1,000 miles. He leaned back to exert pressure on the leather reins tied together and looped behind his neck.
Whoa there!
The mule stopped in its tracks, always more willing to answer to whoa than to giddy up. It slumped immediately into a position of rest, flicking long ears to ward off a bothersome horsefly. Andy slipped a red bandana from his neck and wiped his sweaty face while he waited to hear the latest complaint.
What's that you're leaving behind you? Furrow or snake track?
Farley's attitude grated like a boil on Andy's backside. The furrow was not as straight as it should be, but he'd never claimed he was a good farmer.
A crooked row don't mean a thing to a cornstalk. It'll grow just the same.
You ought to stuck to being a ranger. You'll never make a farmer if you live to be 106.
I'd gladly swap you this mule for that roan. You can push the plow a while, and I can laze around over the country like a property owner.
Farley spent little time behind the plow, leaving that to Andy and a couple of black laborers. As a prospective Brackett in-law, it looked as if Andy was about to marry into a life that was long on hard work and short on appreciation, at least from Farley.
If it wasn't for Bethel, I'd fire you.
If it wasn't for her, I'd have done quit.
Andy had thought a lot about leaving. Were it not for Bethel, he would have put this farm behind him months ago. He felt sure the Texas Rangers would be pleased to take him back. They tried to persuade him not to resign in the first place. The things a man would do for a woman. It was a big farm and a good one. Something to take strong pride in if he had been born with hands that fit a plow handle. But of late he had revisited an old dream of going back west, perhaps to the hill country where he spent a long stretch with the Rangers. It was still but sparsely settled. Land was easy to come by in comparison to this well-populated region of southeastern Texas. Some country out there was so far from the state land office in Austin that a man could squat on it free, at least for a few years, until he could build up his net worth. Another possibility was the rolling plains far to the northwest. There he had friends who would ride to Hell's Rim Rock with him if necessary. They had done it more than once. When Bethel accepted his marriage proposal, the couple planned such a move. She was as eager as Andy. Then Bethel's mother fell ill and deeded the farm to her son and daughter in anticipation of death. Andy and Bethel deferred the wedding and other plans because Bethel didn't want to leave her dying mother. This was home. Bethel grew up here. Her father lay in this ground, and her mother likely would soon. Now that Bethel owned half interest in the place, she no longer discussed leaving. That her cross-grained brother shared ownership became Andy's hard luck. At the time, Farley continued recuperating from a wound suffered in Ranger service on the border, so Andy agreed to stay and help. He worked for foreman's wages, hopeful that Bethel would sooner or later come back around to his way of thinking. Lately, that hope was wearing thin. Farley seemed now to have recovered from the latest of many injuries, major and minor, to which he seemed especially prone. He reverted to the same cranky misfit he had been before.
We get the planting done faster if you pitch in and help. You could take the east field.
Can't. Gotta go to town and get some stuff for Teresa.
Write me a list and I'll go in your place.
I ain't sure you can read any better than you can plow a straight row. Never did see an Indian that could be taught how to farm.
Andy was not an Indian, but Comanches captured him when he was a small boy and kept him for several years. Farley harbored a strong dislike for Indians. Frequently, he threw Andy's old Comanche name up to him.
You're letting that mule get almost as lazy as you are, Badger boy. Him and you had better get back to work.
Andy prided himself on being able to get along with most people. But for years, his relationship with Farley Brackett swung back and forth between uneasy tolerance and outright hostility. Necessity forced them to ride together as rangers. Andy's betrothal to Farley's sister joined them again, however reluctantly, on the Brackett farm. Andy wanted to show Bethel he could be a responsible husband and settle down to the tranquil life of a farmer. By now he had concluded that it would never be tranquil so long as he had to deal with Farley.
Get up! Come on, let's go.
Turning the mule around, he roughly pushed the plow point into the ground and started another row. Andy let Farley's words drift away unanswered on the wind.
Farley ought to shut up and do some work himself. Bethel's so pretty and gentle. How'd she wind up saddled with such a brother?
Andy knew Farley endured hardships enough to sour any man. He bore a war scar on his face and hidden scars deep within. His brothers died fighting the Yankees. He and Bethel lost their father to partisan violence that continued after the war. Farley made himself a scourge to Union Reconstruction authorities and to state police who tried to enforce their edicts. His wildness served as both asset and liability during his later service as a ranger. Andy long tried to accord him the benefit of the doubt. He realized Farley had abundant reason for being angry at most of the world, but sympathetic understanding was hard to maintain when he made himself so damn disagreeable. The sun sank behind clouds low in the west, turning them to orange flame. The last few rows were no straighter than those before, but the hell with it. Farley could do them over himself if he was dissatisfied. Andy wearily laid the plow on its side and unhitched the mule. The lagging animal picked up new energy when it realized it was going to the barn for feed and rest. Andy laid up the leather harness in the barn and fed the mule in a trough hewn from the trunk of a tree. Farley stood brushing the roan. He offered no conversation, but his eyes smoldered. Anything Andy said would draw a barbed response, so he kept his silence. Andy's feet dragged in fatigue as he walked up the porch steps of the big house that Bethel's father built in prosperous times before war tore his family apart. Bethel waited on the porch, youthful and slender and pretty enough to make a man want to hug her to death. She stood on tiptoes and invited a kiss.
You're tired. You should have quit earlier.
Looking into her welcoming eyes, Andy felt warm as sunshine. He embraced her so hard she gasped for breath.
Andy!
I just didn't want to waste any daylight.
That was something Andy often heard Rusty Shannon say. Rusty more or less adopted him after Andy returned from life with the Indians. Rusty managed to keep his patience during Andy's difficult adjustment to the white man's road. Though Rusty carried a gun many years in the ranger service, he remained a farmer at heart, content now to work his own land a few miles from here. Andy hoped he might be able to do the same, but now he dreaded the thought of following a mule up and down these fields for the rest of his life. He had never lost the Comanche instinct for freedom, for drifting with the seasons and yearning to see the yonder side of the hill.
You'll feel better when you've washed up. Teresa and I will have supper ready pretty soon. Have you seen Farley?
Seen and heard him. He's out at the barn.
I wish you'd find a way to get along with him. He's had a hellish life. And he is my brother.
It's hard to forget. He keeps reminding me that I'm just a hired hand, and you're the only reason he lets me stay here.
You're a lot more than a hired hand. What's mine is yours, or will be when we're married.
Ain't nothing really mine here except a couple of horses. Your old daddy built this place. I didn't.
Bethel's eyes pinched.
Get ready for supper.
Bethel's father made a modest fortune steamboating on the Brazos River before buying a large block of land and turning it into a prosperous farm. Carpetbaggers had stolen half of it after the war, but it was still a substantial enterprise. Andy had barely finished drying his face on a towel when Farley stalked onto the back porch, pitched Andy's wash water into the yard, and poured a fresh panful from a bucket.
Badge boy, about what I said out yonder.
Andy hoped he was on the verge of an apology, but he should have known better.
I meant every damn word of it.
Andy's face burned. No appropriate retort came to him. He clenched his teeth and went back into the house. Teresa Brackett placed food and plates on the long dining table that had once served a large family. She smiled, but her dark eyes betrayed uneasiness. New to the family, she'd become painfully aware of the strained relationship between her husband and Andy. She took pains to speak gently, trying to make up for Farley's abrasiveness.
There will come a better day.
Andy had too much respect for Teresa's feelings to share his thoughts. In the past, Farley often voiced a prejudice against Mexicans. But despite himself, he fell in love with Teresa, the half-Mexican daughter of a border rancher. If there was anything consistent about Farley, it was his inconsistency. Now and again, he acted almost human, but he usually got over it before it became a habit. Andy suspected Teresa was already with child, though nothing had been said. It had been only a few months since she and Farley married. If she delivered a son, the poor kid was in for a hard upbringing, Andy thought. Farley would work him like a mule. Farley dropped into a chair at the head of the table, reaching immediately for a steaming biscuit without waiting for the two women to seat themselves.
Ah!
He quickly dropped it onto his plate and blew on his burned fingers. Teresa placed her hand on his shoulder for a fleeting moment.
You ought to have told me it was so hot.
You should have known. It came right out of the oven.
Teresa seated herself in the corner chair that gave her a view of his profile. Andy took satisfaction from her retort. Teresa was not letting Farley run over her. She had some snap, that little olive-skinned woman. It would serve Farley right if she bit his head off.
Did you bring me the things I asked for?
Farley speared a slice of roast beef with his fork and plopped it onto his plate.
Never quite got to town. Lost too much time making sure Andy didn't plow that field crossways.
He works harder than anybody around here.
I could do better with my eyes shut.
Andy withheld comment, though he pictured himself shutting Farley's eyes with his fists. The image brought him pleasure.
Teresa, you and me will go to town together tomorrow, and you can pick out just what you want. When it comes to buying something for a woman, Farley has no more taste than a one-eyed burro.
I had pretty good taste when it came to picking a wife. Better than you've gotten picking a husband. How's Mother?
She didn't feel strong enough to come to the table. She's taking her supper in bed.
Farley ate the rest of his meal in silence, then shoved his plate away.
You women may hear a rumor in town tomorrow, so I'd just as well tell you now.
Tell us what?
I've been asking around for opinions. I've about decided to run for sheriff.
Against Tom Blessing? But he's held that office for years.
Too many years. Tom's getting to be an old man. He's earned the right to sit and rock on his front porch. The county needs a younger man to take over that job. I'm also thinking of the salary and the rewards. We could stand some more cash income on this place. It's a long time between crops.
Andy hadn't thought of Tom as an old man, though he had grandchildren old enough to help him on his farm.
Me and you have both worked with Tom on ranger business. He's a good man, and he's given this community a lot more than he ever got from it.
It's time he had a chance to rest.
Farley's brow furrowed, his eyes boring into Andy's.
You ain't gonna oppose me on this, are you?
Andy didn't waste much time thinking about it.
I will if Tom runs for re-election.
Farley's face colored, the scar on his cheek darker than the rest.
For somebody who's angling to be a part of this family, you show damn little loyalty.
I've known Tom Blessing a lot longer than I've known you. He's been a friend to me and Rusty and everybody else around here.
Farley pushed his chair back.
Bethel, you could have had any man you wanted. Why in the hell did you pick him?
Farley, don't you dare try to...
Bethel turned her gaze to Andy. He saw a silent rebuke in her narrowed eyes.
He asked me, so I told him. If he didn't want an honest answer, he oughtn't to have asked me.
You've got to give him more time. You just don't understand him.
But I do. I understand him too damn well.
Teresa looked down at her plate, her face flushed. Andy saw that further discussion would lead to an even more heated argument. He stood away from the table.
I'd best let the air clear a little.
He walked out onto the front porch. Farley stood there, smoking a newly rolled cigarette. His angry gaze touched Andy, but he said nothing. Andy went on to the barn, where a tack room had been converted into small but comfortable sleeping quarters for him. The arrangement had originally meant to be temporary until he and Bethel married. There were times, like now, when he wondered if they would ever stand before a preacher. Andy sat on a hay bale and began sharpening a hoe to give his hands something to do. A shadow fell against the door. Bethel stood there, frowning at him.
Are you in a mood to talk?
Andy laid the hoe aside. It had not really needed sharpening anyway.
I'm always in a mood to talk to you. But if it's about your brother, I doubt there's any use. He's what he is, and I'm what I am. I don't see either one of us changing.
You could if you both have patience.
I had patience once. Farley has worn it down to a nub.
This farm has been a heavy load for him. He's never had this kind of responsibility before. Once he knows he can handle it, maybe he'll settle down and be easier to get along with.
Bethel, he's never been easy to get along with. If it wasn't for you, I'd have already quit trying.
Try a little longer. We don't want our marriage to start with you and my brother fighting over every little thing that comes up.
He's the one you should talk to. It's him that's always raising hell about something.
She shook her head.
Looks like I can't talk to either one of you.
She left the barn, leaving Andy wondering if he could have said something differently. He didn't know what it might be. Late the next afternoon, Andy was slipping the harness from the mule when he saw two riders approaching the barn. He tensed until he realized neither was Farley. He didn't know anybody willing to ride with Farley anyway. His future brother-in-law was not adept at making friends. Andy's spirit lifted as he recognized Rusty Shannon. Beside him rode Sheriff Tom Blessing, still straight-backed in the saddle despite his years, and broad-shouldered as a blacksmith. In fact, he was a blacksmith and a farmer and a carpenter as well as a peace officer. He could do just about anything he put his mind and hands to. Serious, self-sufficient men like him brought Texas up from the struggling poverty days of the Republic to where it was today. They dismounted and walked into the barn. Andy eagerly shook hands with both of them.
Tom?
Andy!
Rusty, good to see you.
Andy?
Andy considered them the best friends he had, along with a ranger named Len Tanner and an old black farmer named Chanty. Rusty's hair remained the same dull reddish color as when Andy first saw him, though it had begun to show strands of gray. His years as a farmer had given him a muscular build and calloused hands. His eyes were still as keen as during the many years he served as a ranger. They took in the whole farmstead in a sweeping glance. If anything had been amiss, he would have seen it.
It's been a while since you've been over to visit with me and Alice, or to play with the young'un.
I've been meaning to, but working this farm has been like swimming in water over my head.
Andy removed the last of the harness and slapped the mule on the rump. It moved eagerly toward the feed trough.
You all come on up to the house. The women folks keep the coffee pot on, and they'll have supper ready directly.
You reckon Farley's there?
I expect so. He's got a habit of quitting early. New wife, you know.
We don't care to run into Farley, not just yet. We've come to ask if it's a fact that he's fixing to run for sheriff.
Andy looked upon Rusty as a foster brother, and Tom as something of a foster father. He studied the older man with misgivings.
That's what he told me. I tried to talk him out of it, but I'd just as well argue with a fence post.
Is he mad at me about something?
No more than at anybody else. He doesn't need a reason to get mad. It comes on him natural, like rheumatism.
Tom's eyes showed concern.
I've been sheriff a long time. I hadn't thought about putting away my badge.
Anybody who knows Farley is going to think hard before they vote for him. He's not a man they'd want to have authority over them, especially packing a gun.
That's what I've been telling you, Tom. You've got lots of friends. How many's Farley got?
You could crowd them all into a small outhouse and have room left for a plow horse.
Tom frowned in thought while Andy and Rusty continued to present their case.
If you was to quit, that'd leave the county in Farley's hands. Now, you wouldn't want to do that to the folks who've always supported you.
Now, I put up with Farley a long time, and I guarantee that there ain't no pleasure in it.
I suppose you're right.
Sure we're right. You've been here since they dug the river, and we need you. Everybody needs you.
The sheriff unconsciously rubbed his hand over the badge on his vest.
I'll talk it over with the missus.
I bet you a box of cigars that she'll tell you to give Farley the licking of his life.
Tom seemed almost convinced.
That's settled.
Rusty gave Andy a critical study.
Speaking of Farley, I've wondered why you've stayed on here like a hired hand putting up with his ill temper. There's other things you could be doing instead.
But I'd have to leave Bethel. She's tied down here till her mother either gets well or dies.
Rusty didn't appear satisfied with the answer.
If she's really the woman for you, she'll understand. If she's not, she won't. Should you change your mind, you're always welcome over at my place. I can find plenty for you to do.
Same goes for me. I could use a better deputy. The county judge saddled me with a sleepy-eyed kid who doesn't know which end of the broom to sweep with. You'd be a natural for the job on account of your ranger service.
I'll keep it in mind. You sure about not staying for supper?
I need to go back to town. I got a bad one locked up, waiting for the rangers to come and get him.
Anybody I'd know?
Name's Luther Cordell. Him and his bunch held up a bank over in Galveston. Wounded the banker.
Tom's eyes went hopeful.
Andy, I'd like to hire you as a special deputy to help me watch Cordell till they take him off my hands.
Well, I've got too much responsibility here, Tom.
Tom turned toward his horse.
Never hurts to ask.
Andy watched both men remount.
Tom, don't you be worrying none about Farley. He couldn't win that election if he was running against a dead man.
I'm just worried about the cost of electioneering. Cigars don't come cheap.
As the two men rode away, a black farmhand came out of the cowshed carrying a bucket of fresh milk in each hand.
Want me to tow one of them up to the big house for you, Tove?
I'd be obliged, Mr. Andy.
The black workers called him Mister, though they used his given name. Tove handed over one of the buckets.
That old Brenda cow ain't giving milk like she ought to. I'm afraid if Mr. Farley sees the bucket ain't full, he accused me of quitting too quick.
I'll tell him she's drying up. She'll freshen when she has her calf.
It pleased him that some things were beyond Farley's control, like the succession of the seasons and life cycles of the animals. Farley sat in a rocking chair on the porch. He didn't even glance at the milk bucket.
I seen Tom Blessing and Rusty out there talking to you. What did they want?
Andy considered not telling him anything, but he decided perversely that Farley needed more to worry about.
They asked me if you're really figuring to run for sheriff. I told them you are.
What'd they say?
Tom thought about quitting at the end of this term.
Andy waited for Farley's satisfied smile.
Me and Rusty talked him out of it. We told him he'll win the race right handy.
Farley's smile vanished like a match flame in a gale.
Damn you, badger boy!
Farley jumped up so quickly that the chair tipped and almost turned over on its side. He staggered backward, dropping the bucket. Milk splashed across the porch and spilled down the steps. For a moment, Andy saw only sparkling lights. Then Farley's face showed through them. Andy swung at it with all the force he could bring to bear. Farley rushed Andy, swinging his fist like a windmill. One drove breath from Andy's lungs, but Andy managed to land a fist solidly against Farley's nose. Blood ran down Farley's lips and off his chin.
Andy!
Andy struck Farley again and saw his brother-in-law sprawl backward on the porch. Both young women stepped between them.
Andy! Andy! Stop this, Andy!
Bethel grabbed Andy's arms. Farley struggled to gain his feet. Teresa knelt over him, pushing against his shoulders to keep him down.
Back off, Andy. What do you think you're doing?
I'm trying to show your brother. There's some things I won't take.
But he's not a well man. That wound is
more
than
that wound is all healed up. He just leans on it like it was a crutch.
Fighting like a schoolboy. Look at you. Your face all bloody. Who struck first? No. Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
It makes no difference who struck first. It takes two to make a fight. Either one of you could have backed off.
I've been backing off too long. I'm tired of it.
Bethel's eyes cut him like a blade.
And maybe you're tired of me, too.
Andy sobered quickly under the lash of her anger.
You know better than that. But some things get to be more than a man can stand still for.
Teresa let Farley get to his feet. He swayed like a cornstalk in the wind. She took his arm and led him into the house.
We are going out to the back porch and wash your face. Look at your knuckles, all skinned and bleeding.
Farley submitted to her, but gave Andy a smoldering glance before going inside.
This ain't over with.
Bethel righted the rocking chair and forcibly guided Andy backward into it.
What am I going to do with you?
What are you going to do with your brother?
Shaking her head, she went to the door and paused.
Give Farley time to get washed. Then you come in and do the same. We'll have supper on the table pretty soon.
Andy was too angry to eat. Fighting was more strenuous than plowing. By bedtime, Andy felt sore in muscles he forgot he had. He skipped supper, fearing anything he ate would probably come back up. Anyway, he didn't care to sit at the same table as Farley. His stomach still churned after his temper cooled. He sat rocking on the porch, listening to night birds chirping in the live oak trees. He wished his life could be as simple as theirs seemed to be. Bethel came out and sat on the edge of the porch, near enough for him to touch. He didn't try, for he sensed she was still provoked at him. The two sat in silence, close together, yet far apart. He wanted to speak to her, to say something that might quiet her overcharged emotions, but he could think of nothing that wouldn't sound hollow. He had no intention of backing down.
Maybe it'd be better if you left here for a while.
That surprised him, but he knew it shouldn't.
I've been thinking the same thing. I don't want to go by myself, though. I'd want you to go with me.
No, I can't. There's Mother, and there's Farley.
Yes, there's Farley. There'll always be Farley.
Andy wished he could keep the sharpness from his voice, but he was not good at hiding what he felt.
What can we do, then?
Nothing much we can do. We're boxing to a corner. Farley's not fixing to change, and I can't abide him riding me all the time. Looks like I'd best do what you said and leave.
She reached up and took his hands.
I didn't mean what I said. I don't want you to go.
But you don't want me to stay either. If I do, there's bound to be another fight. Maybe several. Looks like there's no choice for me, but you've got one. You can go with me.
You know the answer to that.
Andy felt an ache deep inside.
Then don't set a place for me at the breakfast table. I'll be gone by daylight.
She arose and sat in his lap, her arms around him. He felt her tears wet against his cheek.
I love you, Andy.
And I love you, but...
There was no point in repeating what he already said. Though regret slashed him like a knife, he realized neither could back away. Each took a stand. Pride demanded both stay with it. Neither Rusty nor Alice Shannon made any comment about the bruise on Andy's cheek or the cut on his chin, but they must have seen them. Andy watched Alice rocking her baby boy in a cradle on the Shannon cabin's open dog run, where a gentle breeze toyed with the corner of the infant's blanket. Rusty and Andy sat on a hand-hewn bench against the log wall. Rusty idly whittled on a stick, dropping thin shavings on the ground.
Old Shanny made that cradle. Said he built it to last for at least a dozen youngins. Looks like me and Alice have got our work cut out for us.
Rusty glanced up at her with a shy grin.
Rusty, we don't talk about such as that.
Alice's smile caused Andy a fresh ache, for it was like Bethel's. He tried to cover up.
I've been too busy to go over and see about Shanty. How's he doing?
Shanty was a black farmer who inherited a small piece of land between Rusty's place and the settlement.
Pretty good for his age. I go over and help him now and again when something heavy comes up, and to make sure old Fowler Gaskin doesn't steal him blind. Shanty ain't forgotten that he was once a slave. He won't hardly speak up for himself against a white man, not even a sorry reprobate like Fowler.
Gaskin was another neighbor. Anytime he dropped by a farm, it behooved the owner to count his chickens and inventory his tool shed. Fowler Gaskin believed in the adage that God helps those who help themselves, and he frequently helped himself to whatever wasn't nailed down.
Ain't it about time Fowler died of old age?
I've been hoping a rattlesnake might bite him, but I suppose they recognize their kin.
He's a nasty old man. He hates Rusty and me.
He came borrowing one day when he knew I was gone. He thought Alice would be easy to buffalo, but she tickled his ribs with the muzzle of a shotgun. He ain't been back.
If you'd shot him, no jury around here would convict you.
You never shoot a buzzard close to the house. It stinks too much. Now that you left the Brackett farm, what are you going to do, Andy?
I don't know for sure. Been wanting to go back out to the hill country, get me a place and run some cattle. I've saved up a little from my ranger wages and what I earned on the farm, but it's not enough. Thought about going up to the Rolling Plains and seeing if the Monahan family could use some help. Maybe in a year or two.
You're welcome to stay here with us. I'll pay you for your help. That cabin we built for you was still in good shape. Been using it for storage.
Andy knew Rusty's gesture was made out of kindness, not out of real need for help.
You've already got 3 mouths to feed. There'll be more as time goes by.
Andy looked up at Alice. She said nothing, but he knew her need for that money was greater than his own. She had one baby, and there would be more.
Thanks, Rusty, but I already owe you more than I could ever pay. You took me in and finished raising me even when my own kin turned their backs on me for my Indian ways. I need to make my own way.
That's why I want to help. I've got a lot invested in you.
Besides, I'm not like you. I can't see spending the rest of my life following a plow. I'd be miserable at it. I'd make everybody around me miserable. Especially Bethel. It's better I leave her than to make her unhappy trying to be something I'm not.
Everybody's got to find his own road. Looks like you're meant to travel yours on horseback.
I can't help being what I am.
Then live the way that fits you. There ain't money enough in the world to pay for spending your life at something that makes you miserable.
Rusty paused in his whittling.
You heard Tom say he could use another deputy?
I appreciate his offer, but I need to get farther away, where I won't keep running into Farley.
There's always the Rangers.
I've thought about that. I remember some good times with them, but I also remember how much blood I saw. A little of it was mine.
Rusty took a big slice from the stick he was whittling.
Well, if you ever need a place to come back to for a while, it's here.
Leading a pack mule, Andy rode to Shanty York's. A lanky baying hound greeted him a couple of hundred yards out and escorted him in, announcing him all the way. Andy found the old man taking his ease in an ancient rocking chair beneath a brush arbor beside his one-room cabin. Andy helped build that cabin after a mob of night riders burned the original, trying to drive Shanty off his land. His old dog had been killed, but he wasted no time in replacing him with this one, and he had no trouble coming up with a name for him.
Fowler! Hush up that noise!
Shanty was a small man, his shoulders hunched under the weight of his years. Though he addressed most white people as Mister, he had known Andy from the time he fell back into white hands after his years with the Comanches. Word by word, he helped the lost and frightened boy to remember the native tongue he'd almost forgotten.
Andy! How do, boy?
Shanty walked out across the yard, extending a wrinkled hand. To him, Andy was still a boy, though he was far into his 20s.
Been a while since you come to see this whole wore-out bag of bones.
You know how it is for a farmer. Always more to do than there's hours in the day.
Shanty studied Andy's pack mule with a critical eye.
Looks like you're fixing to travel.
Might be.
The old man looked thin enough for the sun to shine through him.
You don't appear to have been eating regular.
It was a long winter. Victuals got short. But I'll be picking stuff out in my garden patch pretty soon.
Shanty led Andy back to the shade. He motioned toward the rocking chair, but Andy took a bench instead. The old man studied him quietly, as if he were reading everything that was on Andy's mind.
I'm just a wore-out farmer. Nobody ever comes to me for advice, 'cause if it was any good, I'd have took it myself and be better off.
Andy realized Shanty was hinting for him to ask.
Your advice has always been good enough for me.
I've been wondering how long it'd be before you and Mr. Farley come to a parting of the ways. I hope there wasn't no shooting.
Andy had not told him about their fight, but the bruise and cut spoke for themselves. Andy flexed a sore hand.
No shots fired, just a little discussion.
You loved that girl enough to fight for her?
I did. That's how I came by these marks.
Shanty became pensive.
I had me a girl once, when I was young, back in slave times. Trouble was, the field boss wanted her too. He was bigger than an ox and meaner than a boar hog. But I fought him just the same.
Whip him?
No, he gave me the beating of my life. But my girl felt sorry for me, and we jumped the broomstick together. Yeah, that's a good life till they sold her down the river.
Old memories brought sadness to his eyes.
Never seen her again. Nor our child, neither.
Andy wished he had something comforting to say, but nothing came. Feeling that his visit had only served to stir up painful old feelings for Shanty, Andy had turned down an invitation to stay. Shandy had little enough for himself, much less food to share. Andy had given as an excuse that he needed to get on into town. He took the road that veered off to the river. He had gone but a mile or so when he heard a sudden snorting and shuffling of tiny hooves just ahead. Brush crackled as half a dozen wild hogs broke out of its cover. Once this had been prime country for a deer hunter. But most of the larger wildlife had been killed off or driven farther away as the area settled up. Feral hogs, descended from strays lost by early farmers, still ranged along the river, unmarked and unclaimed. People around here routinely killed them for meat, but this was something Shanty couldn't or wouldn't do. He feared someone would claim ownership and put up a holler. A few among his neighbors still resented that he was a black landowner and felt he was not entitled to share in the land's bounty. One of those was Fowler Gaskin. Andy dropped the rope that led the pack animal. He drew his pistol and spurred his horse into a run, circling to get in front of the fleeing animals. He brought the horse to a quick stop, leaned down, and aimed, almost point-blank, at a fat shoat. Then Andy rode back to Shanty's and reined up in front of a small smokehouse behind the cabin.
Look what I found a little ways down the river.
I hope it wasn't wearing no mark. Somebody might come looking for a piece of my hide.
No mark. If anybody asks you about it, tell them to come talk to me.
Andy turned to Shanty as they walked out of the smokehouse into the yard.
Better nail your smokehouse door shut. Fowler Gaskin may come calling.
Shanty fed the dog a strip of fat.
Here you go. Good boy.
Did I hear you call that dog Fowler earlier?
There's some resemblance. Your fool dog's always nosing around where he's got no business, and he'll steal if you take your eyes off of him. If I had the heart to do it, I'd shoot him.
The man or the dog?
The dog. It's the Lord's business what happens to the man. I always pray for them that torments me. I pray that the Lord will turn Mr. Gaskin from his sinning ways and help him find peace when he gets to heaven.
Sooner he leaves on that trip, the better. Except I doubt heaven is anxious to see him. He's more apt to go the other direction.
The Lord must have some purpose for the wicked, or else he wouldn't have made so many of them.
The dog showed continued interest in the pig.
Go on, get away.
It didn't retreat far.
Late as it is, you just as well stay and share supper with me. After all, you brung the meat.
The sun was already half hidden behind timber to the west.
I guess there's no need riding to town in the dark.
We'll have us a time, talking about the good old days.
They weren't all good.
We don't have to talk about the bad ones. Days passed and gone.
Not all of them.
Andy saw no purpose in burdening Shanty with his problems, but the old man saw through his evasion.
Well, maybe if you'd try again, you and that little woman could patch things up.
I didn't say I was leaving her.
You got a powerful lot of stuff tied on that pack mule.
I'm not going for good. At least I don't mean to be. I just gotta put some miles between me and Farley Brackett for a while. Else they'll be hunting one of us down for a killing.
Good book says to turn the other cheek.
I tried that. I only got two.
The cabin was too small for Andy to sleep on the floor, and he declined an offer of Shanty's cot. He spread his blankets beneath the brush arbor, and he didn't go to sleep at first. He kept seeing Bethel and hearing her voice. He was tempted to get up and go back to her, but he kept hearing and seeing Farley Brackett too, and he kept feeling his hands cramp on the plow handles. Sometime during the night, the hounds barking awakened him. Andy thought some varmint was probably after Shandy's chickens. A fox, maybe, or a raccoon. Andy lifted the pistol from the holster lying by his head. He discerned the dog was near the chicken house, telling the news in full voice. In the moonlight, Andy saw the outline of a man fumbling with the door that led into the roosts. He doubted it was Shanty.
What you doing out there?
Startled, the man froze for a second, then hunched over and set off in a run. His movement reminded Andy of a spider. Almost certain who it was, Andy squeezed off one shot into the air. In a moment, he heard a horse galloping away. The direction told him he'd identified the man correctly. Shanty came out of the cabin barefoot and in his underwear.
What kind of varmint was it, Andy?
A two-legged one by the name of Fowler Gaskin. Figured on having him a chicken dinner.
Yeah, I reckon his cupboard is most as empty as mine. He come barring from time to time in the dark. He got eyes like a cat.
Or a skunk.
Andy's initial anger drained slowly as he contemplated the scare he gave the old scoundrel.
He's liable to have to wash his britches when he gets home.
The only time his clothes get washed is when he gets caught in the rain.
Sheriff Tom Blessing listened with a poorly disguised smile as Andy told about the nocturnal prowler.
Sounds like Fowler, all right. Did he get away with anything?
No, I didn't give him the chance.
Best I could do is charge him with trespass. And you'd have to prove it was really him. Even if he got away with a chicken, Shanty'd have to prove it was his. Nobody brands chickens.
Fowler could have plenty of meat without having to steal it. He could go out and hunt wild hogs if he wasn't too low-down lazy.
Shanty would say that the Lord puts people like Fowler here to test our religion, same as he gives us flies and ticks and scorpions.
Tom shrugged off the subject.
I hope you've come to ask me about that deputy job.
No. It'd be something to do for a while, but I need to get farther away.
It looked tame compared to the time you spent with the Rangers, and it'd pay about as well. I'd be pleased for you to sleep in the jailhouse, if you ain't particular about the company.
Andy was weakening.
Couldn't be worse than Farley.
You ain't met my newest guest. Come and let me introduce you to Luther Cordell.
The jail had only a few small cells, for this was mostly a law-abiding farm community. Hunched on the edge of a steel cot, Cordell reminded Andy of a large, shaggy bear. He looked like a tramp who might have hopped from a boxcar and tumbled down the grade. His shirt was dirty and frayed at the cuffs, one elbow out. His trousers were streaked with the grime of hard travel. His hair was tangled, and his face had not felt razor or comb in weeks. A dark beard obscured most of his facial features. However, Andy was drawn by the intensity of the man's eyes. They were like large black buttons that seemed to look through Andy and focus beyond him.
You'd think a man that robs banks could dress better and get himself a haircut.
Yeah, I can't afford to. I invested most of my money in whiskey and sweet-smelling women. What went with the rest of it, I don't know. Just frittered it away, I suppose.
When the Rangers come for you, the state will get you a haircut and a brand new set of clothes.
Well, that'll be nice. It ain't often anybody give me anything without I persuade them first.
At the point of a gun?
That cuts down on conversation. Most people talk too much.
Cordell's gaze drifted to Andy.
That's a likely-looking young fella. What's he in for?
He's an old friend of mine. I'm trying to talk him into being a deputy.
He couldn't be sorrier than that one you got. A lot of time he snores so loud I can't even talk to myself. You'd best get you a better guard if you don't want me to sneak out of here.
The man must outweigh him by 50 pounds, most of it muscle and bone. Very little was fat. Cordell was larger than the sheriff and appeared solid as an oak.
I hope you didn't have to fight with him, Tom.
Nope. Caught him by blind luck. I rode out to talk to Fowler Gaskin about a complaint. Cordell and Fowler had emptied a bottle together and was both sleeping it off. Took him without a struggle.
I always been cursed by a streak of kindness. I felt sorry for that poor old man and shared my whiskey with him.
We know about that poor old man. He would have stole it off you if he could have. Folks around here quit feeling sorry for Fowler Gaskin a long time ago.
I remember that the next time my kind streak start acting up. Oh, damn beans. You need a new cook as much as you need a new damn deputy. Next jail I'm in, I hope it'll serve better groceries.
I eat the same grub when I can't go home.
Yeah, you get paid for it.
Not enough. But at least this jail's new. Our old jail burned down.
I may set a match to this one, too, when I leave.
You're not going anyplace. Not till the Rangers come for you.
Well, at least I like the company here. For a sheriff, you're a pretty good fellow.
Tom led Andy back out of hearing range.
I like Cordell, in spite of myself. He's more pleasure to talk to than most of the people I get locked up in here. I just wish he wasn't a bank robber.
Tom himself was one of the most likable men Andy had ever known. He probably gave away half of his salary to people he saw in need.
Everybody's got some weakness. I guess Cordell's his banks. But you don't need me to help you guard him. An elephant couldn't bust out of here. They built this jail stout enough to stand up under a Galveston hurricane.
He's busted out of others. Got a reputation for being hard to keep in a coop.
Tom rummaged in a desk drawer and brought out a badge.
I wish you'd take this.
He handed it to Andy. Tarnished, it said City of San Antonio. Andy figured the county was saving money by reusing what someone else discarded.
Sorry, Tom.
Andy handed back the badge.
I'd see to it that the commissioner's court treats you right when it comes to pay. I got a little dirt on most of them.
I appreciate the offer just the same.
I done it for me more than for you. I ain't spent a night at the farm since I had Cordell behind these bars. He talks pleasant, but I know he's slippery.
Not too slippery for you to catch him.
He was drunk.
The skinny young man with sleepy eyes walked through the door. He seemed momentarily startled at seeing the sheriff.
Tom, I wasn't gone but just a minute. I thought I heard a noise, and I stepped out to see.
I was just snoring. Andy, this is Speck Munson. Speck, meet Andy Pickard. I was just offering him a job as a deputy.
Munson's thin face fell.
Does this mean I'm fired?
Not yet, but it means I'm thinking about it, so watch you don't aggravate me. It looks like Cordell's slop jar needs emptying.
Yes, sir.
Munson fetched a set of keys from the sheriff's desk. He walked to Cordell's cell door.
What the hell you think you're doing?
Well, you told me to empty the slop jar.
Not till you've handcuffed him. I've told you a dozen times. Make him slip his hands through the bars first.
Cordell extended his arms, one hand on either side of a bar. Munson locked the handcuffs over his wrists, securing the prisoner to the cell door.
See the kind of help I've been getting?
He's not used to working with men of Cordell's caliber.
He just ain't used to working.
Andy watched Munson carry the jar, holding it at arm's length and turning his head away from the smell.
Tom, we're feeding him way too much.
Munson returned in a while. He locked the cell door, then unlocked the handcuffs. Cordell faked a quick grab at him through the bars.
Hey!
Munson jumped as if a rattlesnake had struck and dropped the cuffs. Cordell's black eyes danced with laughter.
I like to got you that time.
Munson was shaking as he laid the cuffs on Tom's desk.
He's baiting you for fun.
I might as well enjoy myself while I'm in jail.
But maybe that'll teach you to keep both your eyes open. When he sees a real chance, he won't be funning.
When I was a ranger, I used to study criminals and try to decide what makes them that way.
Ever figure it out?
Never did.
Some people are natural sons of bitches from the day they're born. Others learn it along the way. As far as we know, Cordell's never killed anybody. He probably carried flowers home to his mama.
Andy leaned against the bars across the aisle from Cordell and gave the man a long, silent study. Cordell stood it for a while, but Andy's staring finally got to him.
What's so damn interesting?
You. I was wondering what you'd look like with a shave and a haircut and the dirt washed off.
Oh, I got a face that'll break a mirror. I keep it covered up with whiskers so as not to shock the public and give dogs conniption fits.
Andy spent the night on a hard cot in an empty cell. It would have cost him 4 bits to sleep in a wagon yard, a privilege he denied himself, but allowed for his horse and pack mule. Tom had a cot near the jail's front door, but his sleepy eyes indicated that he hadn't slept much. He took out his pocket watch and frowned at it.
High time Speck was here to take over. Let us go for some breakfast.
It was a while before Speck Munson showed up at the door, carrying a tray with the prisoner's morning meal.
I was about to send out a posse for you.
The rooster slept late.
The smell of coffee made Andy realize he was hungry.
Still taking your meals across the street?
When I have to stay in town of a night. Once I get Cordell off my hands, I'm going out to the farm and staying for a week. I intend to debauch myself on my wife's peach preserves.
Maybe it's time you did retire. You could stay out there from now on.
Don't think it ain't been on my mind, but I don't like leaving the office in Farley Brackett's hands. I ain't sure he's the man for it.
Andy couldn't argue that point. The restaurant's biscuits had been baked an hour or more already and kept in a warming oven long enough to dry them out. The eggs were burned along the edges and the bacon had been fried to tastelessness. The kitchen badly needed a woman's influence. Andy pitied Tom, having to put up with this day after day. He had finished his eggs and was sipping his bitter black coffee.
Sheriff! Something don't look right over at the jailhouse.
What?
I seen a man go in the door. Another is waiting outside with some horses. Acts nervous, like he's standing watch.
Damn. Speck wasn't supposed to let anybody in there.
Tom was instantly on his feet and out the door before Andy could free himself from the table. Andy started to run after Tom, but realized he'd left his pistol in the bedroll to avoid carrying it into the jail.
Son of a...
Andy sprinted to the wagon yard, past a startled hostler, and found his saddle on a rack where he'd left it. He jerked his rifle from its scabbard and set off at a fast trot. He heard gunfire from inside the jail. Two men burst through the jailhouse door. One he recognized instantly as Cordell. The other man snapped a quick shot at Andy, kicking up dust. Andy dropped to one knee and brought up the rifle. He sighted on Cordell, but a horseman hurried up, leading two riderless mounts. He moved in the way of Andy's line of fire and almost fell from the saddle before regaining his balance.
Let's get out of here, boys!
The three sent their mounts into a hard run, rounding the corner of the jail, putting it between themselves and Andy. He had no chance for another shot. Andy rushed to the jail. Speck Munson lay curled in a heap, an ugly bruise on the side of his head. In the center of the room, Tom was sprawled on his stomach, a pool of blood spreading around him.
Tom!
A bullet had nicked the badge on its way in. Tom was in a bad way. The wooden floor shook as other men came pounding into the room.
What the hell happened, Andy?
Andy didn't look up at them. Tears blinded him, burning his eyes.
Damn it, Tom. Damn it.
The wagon yard hostler looked stricken.
I'll go for the doctor.
Andy tried to get a grip on his surging emotions.
I'm going after Cordell and whoever's with him. Anybody who wants to go with me, meet me at the wagon yard. Damn.
He picked up his rifle and rushed out to saddle his horse. Luther Cordell should have been grateful for his release, but instead, he showed a crackling anger.
Damn you, Milt! You didn't have to shoot that sheriff! You could have just clubbed him like you'd done a deputy!
Milt Hayward was a large man like Cordell, broad shoulders, hunched a little, his heavy-featured face flushed in defensive response.
He was blocking the door. I didn't have all day to make up my mind. Now, how come you didn't holler about me shooting that Galveston banker?
You nick him enough just to make him mad. Anyway, nobody gonna miss a banker much or a lawyer. But you kill a lawman, you got every ranger and two-bit local sheriff in the state getting a rope ready for you. For all three of us.
Well, maybe you wanna go back and apologize.
I doubt them folks are in a listening frame of mind.
Cordell turned to the kid who trailed behind them.
How bad are you hit, Buster?
Buster Jones wasn't his real name, but it served as a convenient substitute for the name his mother gave him. He was bent over his saddle horn, arms tight against his body as if holding in the pain.
Not bad enough for you all to go off and leave me.
Only a rattlesnake would do that. Hang on till we in the clear, then we stop and look at that wound.
They pushed their horses hard, bent on putting as much distance behind them as possible in the first minutes. They had little chance to hide their tracks, but they were on a well-beaten trail where the dirt was soft. Perhaps their tracks would be hard to differentiate from many others already there. They'd covered 3 miles. Cordell saw nobody coming up behind them.
We better stop and take a look at Buster.
And them people are bound to be after us by now. That kid'll get us caught sure as hell.
That kid didn't need to get shot at all. It was a harebrained idea breaking me out. You know I always managed to bust loose by myself. I was just biding time till that sleepy-headed deputy got careless.
Then you'd have snuck back and dug up the bank money. You'd have kept it all for yourself and cut me plumb out.
Damn, you don't trust me much.
I ain't trusted anybody since I was 6, and my old daddy whipped me with the buckle end of his belt. As soon as I get my share, I'm gone. Then you can ride to hell and out the far side as far as I'm concerned.
Cordell had never understood the greed that led a man to put money ahead of loyalty to those who rode with him. In this case, he attributed it to a poor upbringing. Milt's sour manner kept him from cultivating friends. Associates in crime, but not friends. They stopped in the shade of a live oak tree. Cordell and Buster dismounted. Milt remained in the saddle, where he had a better view of their back trail. Buster was a freckle-faced, gap-toothed kid of 19 or 20, with a better upbringing than Milt's, The wound was low on his shoulder, a little farther over and the bullet would have hit him in the heart.
Is it gonna hurt much, Luther?
His face was drained from shock, making his freckles stand out like speckles of brown paint.
Now, it ain't gonna hurt. I got a touch lighter than any woman's.
Cordell opened Buster's shirt and pulled it down off his shoulder. He poked around the wound.
Yeah, that bullet in there, and it looked like it busted a bone. This ain't the time or the place to try and dig it out. I wished I had me some whiskey to pour in that hole.
Milt reached in his saddlebag. He pitched a pint bottle to Cordell.
Here. I paid dear for this stuff. Don't waste it.
I won't.
Cordell took a long drink and handed it to Buster so he could do the same.
This might smart a little.
Cordell poured most of the remaining whiskey into the wound. The bottle was nearly empty when Cordell pitched it back. Milt looked as if he'd just bitten into a buzzard's supper.
Damn you, Luther! I told you this stuff was hard to come by!
Taking a sweat-stained silk neckerchief from his neck, Cordell tied it around Buster's shoulder and under his arm.
I ain't one to shovel out a lot of advice, boy, but this ought to make you think about finding a better way to make a living. For every night I slept in a bed, I laid on the ground 100 times. Right now, I ain't got $20 in my pocket hardly. You all busted in before I finished breakfast, and I ain't likely to get dinner or supper either. Yes, sir. This kind of life has sure been good to me, huh? I'd trade it in a minute for 40 acres and a mule.
Are we gonna talk all day or are we traveling?
Hey, nobody like a grouch.
And I don't like the idea of a rope necktie. Let's go pick up that money and get the hell away from here.
Cordell's goal was a badly deteriorated log cabin that appeared almost ready to slump to the ground. Pressed by a posse, the three had split up after visiting the bank in Galveston. Cordell had been carrying the money. The day had been late and the clouds threatening rain the evening he'd come across the cabin by chance. He'd confronted a wizened old man who called himself Gaskin. At first he had all the charm of a snake with its rattles pinched off. But he'd softened when Cordell offered to share a bottle of whiskey in return for a night's shelter from the rain. While Gaskin was immersed in whiskey, Cordell hid his saddlebags in the bottom of the old man's woodbox, along with the proceeds from his latest venture into banking. He figured on being up and gone the next morning before Gaskin woke up. That farmer sheriff ought to have been out feeding his chickens or plowing his field. Instead, he showed up while Cordell was fighting the worst hangover in a long time. He had no chance to retrieve the bags or find a better hiding place. Perhaps Gaskin had not discovered them yet. The old reprobate had struck Cordell as one who didn't cook much for himself, but lived mostly on whiskey and tobacco. Maybe he'd not dug out enough firewood yet to expose the treasure.
Ain't nobody but an old man where I left his saddlebag. I doubt he's gonna give us much trouble. Even if he does, Milt, I don't want you shooting him, you hear? One man today is enough.
What do you got a bitch about? We broke you out of jail.
I kinda like that sheriff. Them people back there thought right smart of him, too.
Well, maybe he ain't dead.
You better be praying that he ain't.
I tried praying when I was a youngin'. Nobody answered. Get me my share of that money, and I won't need God or the devil, either one.
Getting shed of milk could not come soon enough for Cordell. The last thing a man needed in this line of business was to ride with such a reckless misfit. The only reason they were together was that he thought he needed someone with more maturity than Buster. But Milt didn't grow up. He just got older. As best Cordell remembered, Gaskin's shack should be a little way ahead. He had purposely avoided describing the place or the man for fear that Milt would decide to try taking all the money. That would be 3 times better than a 1/3 cut.
Damn it, look. Here they come.
Cordell twisted in the saddle. He saw 7 or 8 riders a few 100 yards behind, pushing hard to catch up. The three spurred their horses into a gallop. For a moment, Cordell considered making a try for the bank loot in spite of the odds. He gave up the notion with reluctance.
We can't stop for that money now!
Buster lagged behind.
Son of a bitch! We'd have had time if you hadn't bossed around patching up that kid. He's gonna die anyway. I can tell by looking at him. I say we go off and leave him.
You don't quit a partner!
You do when it's your neck. I ain't getting hung for him or nobody else.
Mills broke away and turned south, quirting his horse at every stride. Cordell ground his teeth in frustration, but decided Mills' desertion was probably for the best. Cordell had to do most of the thinking for this outfit anyway. Mills' defection meant a larger split for himself. Cordell knew the range was too great for accuracy, but the pistol shots from behind encouraged him to spur harder. Somebody back there might have a rifle and the presence of mind to dismount and take good aim. He had run from enough hastily formed citizen posses to know that most gave up when they found themselves getting far from home. With a little luck, he and Buster should outlast this one.
Hang on tight, Buster! We heading for the river! Maybe we can lose them in the brush!